And I know that for a lot of communities, the Latino community, the LGBT community, for, you know, young people, I know that that's important. But you really run to be mayor of everybody.
You know, I'm an entertainer, a showgirl, an actress and musician. So my heart has always been in telling stories and performing. And so it moves me particularly to see how those things can change hearts and minds.
Welcome to This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. A backroom deal bans marriage equality in Slovakia, but Wisconsin couples rush to wed, while North Dakota's journey begins, and the adventures of trans activist and entertainer Calpurnia Adams. Those stories and more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Ryan Pest.
And I'm Tanya Kane Perry.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending June 7th, 2014. 102 of Slovakia's 150 members of parliament voted this week for a constitutional amendment to specifically ban the civil marriage of same-gender couples. Only 18 lawmakers voted against the ban, which was primarily supported by the opposition Christian Democrats. According to reports, the ruling Social Democrats of Prime Minister Robert Fico went along in order to get opposition support for the government's proposals for judicial reforms. No public hearings were held on the marriage ban legislation, and LGBT advocates called it a backroom deal struck by the two parties behind closed doors. And while a 2012 survey in Roman Catholic majority Slovakia found 47% support for civil unions, there's no movement in parliament to create them, and the country's lesbian and gay couples continue to remain legally invisible.
On the brighter side for equality proponents, same-gender couples will now be able to marry at British consulates in 23 countries. The Foreign and Commonwealth Office's list, where legal consulates' nuptials can be held, include Serbia, China, Japan, and Russia. Local authorities apparently need to okay them, however. Vitaly Milonov, the Russian MP who co-sponsored the country's oppressive law banning so-called gay propaganda, was unfazed by the British move, telling the Moscow Times that they can marry monkeys and register perverts for all I care.
Bans on civil marriage for gay and lesbian couples continue to fall like dominoes across the United States. U.S. District Judge Barbara Crabb declared the ban in Wisconsin to be unconstitutional on June 6th. She gave the state 10 days to request an injunction, but didn't include a stay of her ruling. Expecting the ban to be overturned, Republican Attorney General J.B. Van Hollen had filed an unsuccessful request asking for a stay several days before the ruling was issued. His office vowed to seek that stay from an appeals court and to vigorously challenge the judge's decision to overturn the marriage ban. Word soon spread that no stay had been issued, and lesbian and gay couples rushed to county offices that clerks had decided to keep open into the evening hours of Friday, June 6th. At least 130 same-gender couples had married in Milwaukee and Dane counties by the end of the evening. Dane County includes the state capital of Madison. Milwaukee County Executive Chris Abell told reporters that, "I have been waiting decades for this day to finally arrive, and we won't make loving couples wait longer than they want to get married." He also promised to personally pay for any overtime costs associated with keeping the courthouse open. Same-gender couples continued to get marriage licenses in those two counties on Saturday, the 7th. This was the 20th consecutive ruling overturning a state civil marriage ban since last year's Supreme Court ruling requiring the federal government to recognize legally married same-gender couples. There are more than 70 marriage equality cases pending in 31 states.
Make that 32. Seven same-gender couples filed suit on June 6th in North Dakota, the only remaining state to have had its civil marriage ban uncontested. The lawsuit, filed in U.S. District Court in Fargo on June 6th, not only challenges the ban itself, but also North Dakota's refusal to recognize the civil marriages of same-gender couples performed in other states. The couples are represented by Minneapolis attorney Josh Neuville, who is also representing six South Dakota couples in a similar case.
there were developments in several other state marriage equality cases this week. Idaho's Republican Governor Butch Otter wants the entire 11-judge panel of the 9th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals to hear his government's appeal of a ruling striking down the state's marriage ban. A 3-judge panel is normally selected to hear such appeals. In the filing, state lawyers argued that a decision by an 11-judge panel stands far higher and stronger than does a decision by a 3-judge panel, just as a decision by a 3-judge panel stands far higher and stronger than does a decision by a single judge. Critics charged that a hearing by the full circuit would be more costly and would substantially slow down the appeal process. Michigan's attorney general asked for a similar en banc hearing of the challenge to his state's marriage ban by the 6th Circuit last month. But his filing was unanimously rejected.
The 10th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals granted Utah's request this week to delay the implementation of a ruling that ordered the state to start recognizing the marriages of some 1,300 same-gender couples. They tied the knot during the brief period they could in late December and early January after a district court decision struck down the state's ban and until the U.S. Supreme Court stopped the marriages 17 days later, pending the state's appeal. U.S. District Judge Dale Kimball had ruled that the state's decision to deny them marital benefits during the appeal process was harming those couples and had ordered Utah's recognition of their marriages to begin on June 9th. The 10th Circuit stopped his order from taking effect. But the appeals court has already heard oral arguments in the case, and a ruling on the constitutionality of Utah's ban of civil marriage for same-gender couples is expected soon.
Circuit Court Judge Sarah Zabel denied a request by 3 anti-equality groups that wanted to intervene in the case challenging Florida's marriage equality ban. Florida Family Action, Florida Democratic League, and People United to Lead the Struggle for Equality, or PULSE, had no legal standing, she wrote, because they won't be directly and immediately affected if others enter into a same-sex marriage, adding that the validity of their own marriages will not be affected, regardless of the trial's outcome. Judge Zabel is scheduled to hear the case on July 2nd.
As expected, the U.S. Supreme Court rejected without comment an attempt by the country's most ubiquitous anti-equality group, the National Organization for Marriage, or NOM, to stop same-gender couples from getting married in Oregon. A district court judge overturned that state's ban on civil marriage for lesbian and gay couples, and Oregon officials refused to appeal the ruling. District Court Judge Michael McShane had rejected NOM's request to intervene while he was considering the case, citing their lack of legal standing. This week's high court action affirmed that decision.
And in another legal defeat for the group this week, a federal district court judge soundly rejected NOM's lawsuit against the Internal Revenue Service. It charged that the IRS's accidental disclosure of a federal tax form that included the names and dollar amounts of NOM's donors was part of a deliberate attempt to chill the First Amendment activity of NOM, its donors, and others who associate with NOM. The group has always claimed that disclosures of its donors' names puts them at risk for intimidation and harassment, though no such actions have ever been verified. District Court Judge James C. Kacharis called the group's arguments unconvincing and unpersuasive. NOM, as the party with the burden of proof as to this issue, he wrote, was required to produce sufficient evidence from which the fact finder could conclude that the disclosure was willful or grossly negligent. The judge concluded that NOM had failed to produce a shred of proof to support its allegations. NOM lost another disclosure case in the state of Maine last week and was fined more than $50,000 for failing to provide donor information required under that state's election laws.
In other news, several thousand LGBT people and their supporters turned out for a first-ever LGBT Pride event in the Mediterranean island nation of Cyprus on May 31st, many more than the few hundred people organizers were expecting. Police blocked a small but vocal contingent of Eastern Orthodox Church protesters from entering the celebration grounds in the capital city of Nicosia, though someone managed to throw a smoke bomb into the crowd. Some of the fundamentalists scuffled with police, but there were no injuries reported.
Democratic Governor Alejandro Garcia Padilla has appointed Maite Oronoz Rodriguez to the Supreme Court of Puerto Rico. Rodriguez would be the highest-ranking openly lesbian or openly gay judge at the state level in the United States. The Commonwealth of Puerto Rico is a U.S. territory, and its Supreme Court is equal to any state Supreme Court. The Puerto Rican Senate is expected to approve Rodriguez's appointment after routine confirmation hearings that are scheduled in the coming week.
And finally,
I know that there's certainly historical implications of my election, and I know that for a lot of communities, the Latino community, the LGBT community, for young people, I know that that's important, but you really run to be mayor of everybody.
Robert Garcia made history on many levels when voters in Long Beach, California elected him mayor on June 3rd. He becomes the city's first out mayor, its first Hispanic mayor, and at 36, the city's youngest ever mayor. He's held a seat on the city council since 2009 and garnered 52% of the vote in a mayoral runoff election with a fellow Democrat. Long Beach is just south of Los Angeles, and with a population approaching 500,000 people, is California's seventh largest city. The Peruvian immigrant and mayor-elect spoke exclusively with local NBC TV reporter Mikalo Medina about living the American dream.
I came here as an immigrant with my mom. I was five when we got to the U.S. And seeing my mom work so hard, she worked at thrift stores and working at, small jobs, cleaning homes, and to see me go to college, be the first of my family to go to college, and then now here, I think is great. But I always say that anything I do is a family accomplishment. At the end of the day, when we go on Sunday nights and we try to have all dinner together, it's still the same family and still talking about the same stuff.
That's News Wrap for the week ending June 7th, 2014. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap was written by Greg Gordon, recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles, and produced by Steve Pride.
News Wrap from This Way Out is brought to you by you.
Help keep us on the air and in your ears at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast. I'm Tanya Kane Perry.
And I'm Ryan Pest.
I've got a sweet tooth, licorice drops and jelly rolls.
Hi, this is John Cameron Mitchell, the writer-director of Hedwig and the Angry Inch and Short Bus. And you're listening to This Way Out, the international weekly radio magazine for all our sexually diverse communities.
It's been a fast-paced couple of weeks in transgender news. India's latest census counted almost 500,000 people identifying with the country's new legal third gender. The U.S. government lifted its ban on Medicare coverage for transition-related care. The Pentagon's official Pride event featured a transgender MC. The state of New York lifted its requirement that trans people must have undergone reassignment surgery before being able to change the gender on their birth certificates, and organizers of this year's Pride celebration in West Hollywood decided to emphasize the dire plight of trans people around the world, putting the T first, as in TLGB. That's far more progress than could have been predicted 15 years ago when PFC Barry Winchell was murdered. Winchell was heterosexual, but he was mercilessly harassed and ultimately bludgeoned to death by two other U.S. soldiers because of his relationship with a transgender woman, Calpurnia Adams. The tragic story, as told from Adams' point of view, became the award-winning 2003 film Soldier's Girl. Calpurnia Adams prefers not to dwell on painful memories of the hate crime. She's gone on to a career as a consultant on movies like Transamerica and Dallas Buyers Club, and is an entertainer in her own right. She was introduced with a sample of her music when she visited IMRU, the local TLGB radio show in Los Angeles.
She's just so stunning.
Stunning, I'm stunning. When I walk into a room, all the boys come a-running. Take a look, but don't touch.
down and said, I know I'm stunned. You can try to do what I do and emulate me, but you'll need a magic mirror if you want to see what I see. When it's even self say, Jesus, you shouldn't have. But when I think about it, he probably couldn't have. Big bad bitch with a bad reputation. But your gargles do nothing, I still give you radiation. Stunning, I am stunning.
I'm Steve Pride.
I'm Stephen Rains.
And I'm Ian McKinnon.
That song is called Stunning, and the glamour chanteuse performing it is not only stunning herself, but she's an actress, a tireless community activist, and recently 43 million people in the U.S. alone heard her name when Jared Leto thanked her on the Oscars during his acceptance speech, and that name, Calpurnia Adams.
Hi, everybody.
I contacted you right after that, and you were speaking at Oxford. Tell me about that.
I was in London during the Oscars. I had gone there to speak at Oxford University, so flattered that they would ask me to come there. I was certainly, out of my element as a bit of a hayseed turned Hollywood has been. So, just kidding. But it was really amazing to be at Oxford and then at the same time to see the Oscars unfold like they did. It was just kind of a crazy week. You know, it kind of started years ago with the movie Soldier's Girl, which was about things that happened in my life. And an actor was playing me in the film. Lee Pace played me. And I sort of started describing what the experience of being trans is like. And then, you know, there are a lot of technical questions, a lot of emotional exploration and stuff that I think acting specifically educates you in a way of how to ask certain questions. After Lee, then I did a similar consultation with Felicity Huffman. And by the time I had done this with Jared, he just had a lot of questions like, why do people transition? You know, the basics. I tailored a lot of what I said to the character because I read the script. And, you know, Rayon was in the 80s. She didn't have access to money or education or support, you know, plastic surgery. She didn't have hormones. So women I've known like Rayon who are on the streets, who are perhaps doing sex work, who are struggling with addiction, their transition manifests itself in a lot different way than, you know, say like Cochinelle, the French singing and dancing star from the 40s. There are a lot of layers to it. I think my activism lets me talk about different segments of the community and my own personal experience too.
Is that difficult to be called on so frequently to tell other actors how to do the job?
I want to see trans people in these roles. You know, I think we are ideal to play people who've made this journey in life because it's such a unique journey in a lot of ways. It incorporates physicality that you can really only have if you have transitioned. You know, you're born with all the characteristics of one gender, and then you modify and transition those physical characteristics to fit your soul. And like a lot of that stuff can't be faked by actors and things. I think we're still at a transitional period in Hollywood, though, right now, where, you know, movies are made to make money, to sell theater tickets, et cetera. So they are making decisions based on what's going to recoup their money. And right now, those decisions involve bringing in people like Jared Leto and Felicity Huffman and people who are great and pack the seats. I just kind of hope my philosophy is that if I help Jared and I help Felicity and sympathetic, empathetic people, that amazing stories are going to make it to the screen, that people aren't going to be so afraid of writing these roles, of creating them. And then, you know, I may age out of it, unfortunately, at a certain point, but at least somebody will get the chance, a trans woman, a trans man, to play these roles. And even better, play roles that aren't trans, you know, because I define myself as a woman who happens to have transitioned. So I'd love to just play a soccer mom or you know, anything cool. I've often been told in auditions, like, you know, you look too much like a woman or you sound too much like a woman, and which is weird because they're casting a trans character. And I'm like, you know, a lot of us do sound like this. A lot of us do look like this, you can't just not give me the role because I don't look like what I really am. It's funny.
Yeah. And I imagine with Soldier's Girl, where not only are you aware of like trans representation, but also someone was representing you on the screen. What was that experience like?
Well, that's particularly, you know, strange on top of strange circumstance. And, you know, especially it's been over 15 years since my boyfriend was murdered by people who, you know, had a lot of anti-gay bigotry and some anti-trans sentiment, too. But at the time that that film was being made, you know, there were the layers of grieving for his death and the murder, of anger, wanting to get justice, and a lot of things like that were at play, as well as just, you know, I want you to make a good representation. Because in, what was it, 2004, I think, there were even fewer representations of trans people in the media. So I felt like, you know, if this is going to get made, please do a good job. And I think they did. You know, Lee doesn't look anything like me. You can tell that he's, you know, not transitioned or whatever, but he brought a ton of heart to the role, and it did the job that needed to be done in that moment in time.
Has the community changed significantly? Because I remember at the time there was a controversy with a major gay organization that seemed to be bothered that he wasn't a gay man who was murdered, that he was actually dating a transgendered person.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to look at the sort of array of issues that are internal to the LGBT community that I've sort of struggled with in just the last 11 years that I've been in Hollywood, one of them was that I think it would have been much more convenient for activists if my boyfriend Barry had been gay, because then it would have been very easy to classify his murder as an anti-gay hate crime. Barry actually was heterosexual and dated women, was attracted to women, and he saw me as a woman at the time, which I was and am. But the key to the thing is that they murdered him because they thought he was gay, because they considered me a man, and thus him dating me made him gay. And that bias in the killer's mind is what made it an anti-gay hate crime, even though Barry himself was not actually gay.
And out of that experience, you created Deep Stealth.
You know, I'm an entertainer, a showgirl, an actress and musician, so my heart has always been in telling stories and performing. And so it moves me particularly to see how those things can change hearts and minds. I'm not a mathematician or a brain surgeon or anything, so I don't, you know, look through those venues. I rely on other people to change the world with those. But I moved to Chicago for a year to start over after the tragedy, and met a trans woman named Andrea James, who started TSRoadmap.com, which was one of the first informational websites online for transition information. It was actually so early that it was a site on AOL before you could kind of get an easy web address. And AOL actually shut down at night. It was like one of the old BBSs in the 80s or something. So, you know, you had to like log on to AOL and get onto TS Roadmap to get medical, legal, psychological, you know, info on how to transition. And Andrea, you know, has since expanded that site greatly and a lot of others. We started our production company together, though, Deep Stealth Productions, using her experience as an advertising executive writing for the Super Bowl and McDonald's and Budweiser, and, you know, my sort of savvy with being a personality, and made our production company.
It's interesting. The visibility in both the bisexual and the trans community is not what it is with the L and the G, because for the reason you named your company, Deep Stealth. The goal mm-hmm. of many people is to not be perceived as transgendered.
Right, right. And especially in the older days of transition, like in the 30s and 40s and even before that with people like Billy Tipton, trans people were severely discriminated against, punished, even murdered if they were discovered. So to avoid punishment, you had to blend in perfectly and disappear. And also a lot of them just didn't want to deal with all the mess. You know, they just wanted to be a woman and get married and live behind a white picket fence or be a man and do whatever. So they vanished. I think after like ACT UP and, you know, some other things happened in the 80s and Stonewall before that and everything, I think trans people changed tack a little bit and a new generation started coming out more.
Well, and you mentioned Billy Tipton, who was a musician, correct?
Mm-hmm.
And you're a musician yourself. Could you talk a little bit about what you've been working on recently?
Well, I've got some acoustic music. Like when I was in London, I started recording an acoustic EP that's produced by my friend Patrick Wolfe. If you guys don't know him, Google him. He's an amazing out trans. He's kind of like out gay. I mean, Patrick's not trans, but he's almost like a male Kate Bush. I'm a Kate Bush freak, but he plays all those instruments. He writes his own songs. He's producing for me, and I'm releasing an acoustic song on my YouTube channel with a hand-illustrated and animated music video.
So you're an animator as well as all these other things.
The thing is, I'm not really any of these things. I just do them. I'm like, you know, well, I can hold a pen. I can, you know, pick up an auto harp, and you just do it.
You just do it. I don't think most people do, but clearly you do.
You guys.
So your music, what instruments do you play?
Well, I grew up playing the fiddle, and my family had kind of an informal bluegrass gospel band. My mother was a church pianist. Daddy played the banjo. I played the fiddle. My brother played the guitar. My sister sometimes played the tambourine, but she wasn't really into it.
And you were on film playing the fiddle in...
In Transamerica, yeah. I had a small on-screen role playing fiddle.
I think we're almost out of time here with Calpurnia.
And
thank you so much for coming down. Is there a website for more information?
Calpurnia.com. That's Calpurnia. And that's the same on Facebook and Twitter, and everything's just / Calpurnia.
Author, actress, entertainer, and trans activist Calpurnia Adams was interviewed by Steve Pride, Stephen Rains, and Ian McKinnon. Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the international gay and lesbian radio magazine. This week, Ryan Pest, Tanya Kane Perry, and Steve Pride, Stephen Rains, and Ian McKinnon contributed program material. John Cameron Mitchell and Calpurnia Adams performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks the Ivana Foundation, the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation, a bequest from the estate of Christopher David Trentum, and our generous listeners for making this program possible. You can find our backstory at thiswayout.org, who we are, how we work, and how you can join in. You'll also find Now Playing information and links to our blog, Facebook, and Google Plus pages. This Way Out is also available on iTunes. Follow TWO Radio on Twitter, email tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappelle and the entire This Way Out family, I'm Greg Gordon. We thank you for listening online at thiswayout.org and on KGNU, Boulder, Fort Collins, Ward, and Denver, Colorado, 7THE, Hobart, Tasmania, WEFT, Champaign, Urbana, Illinois, and more than 200 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Stay tuned.